Sandra, and Noah.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Theater World Podcast. My name is Noah Bender.
And I'm Sandra Nemchik.
And our guest today is a wonderful theater educator who taught middle school drama at Bowditch Middle School for 37 years, taught both of us, and is one of the most dedicated and nurturing directors I have ever worked with. Please welcome Virginia Musante.
Yay. Hello. Hi.
Hi, Virginia.
Hi,
so
guys.
Nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, we talk to you regularly, too. It's not just something that we do, you know, every now and then. You're always kind of in our life, ever present.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
But we want to take a few minutes to just like break it down with you because, I don't know, you have been an impactful figure in our lives.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you again. Well, it's wonderful.
Yes.
You both impacted my life as well.
Oh, because I knew you.
Yeah, right.
I think we're all just going to be quelling this whole interview.
Oh,
yeah, exactly.
But yes, so let's start with our connection. I mean, like you taught at Bowditch Middle School, where Xander and I both went a few years apart, and we had like you taught drama, and you are situated, I feel like, at a crucial point in kids' lives. I feel like.
Definitely.
Where a lot of people are gaining enthusiasm for what they want to do, drama or whatever, at this phase in their life in middle school. And I want to ask you, like, what does it feel like having that kind of responsibility as the person who is like who is bringing people into this, you know, art form of drama?
I really started out wanting to teach high school. Mm-hmm. And I went and observed before I was assigned to my student teaching. This is back in 1975, when you were both not even here yet, probably.
You were discoing on the weekends, right?
Yeah, right. That's right. I saw this school. It was very unique. You guys probably didn't even appreciate it as much as I did, because at the time when I first saw Bowditch, it was so pro arts. It was very much a highly functioning art school. Mm-hmm. And it wanted kids to experience as many different kinds of arts as possible. They had a little art gallery. They had a classroom that was built sort of like a little mini theater. So I fell in love with the school, but I wasn't sure about the age group. And then as soon as I started to get to know middle school, I realized that middle school is every age. You have kids that are like second graders, and you have kids that are like high school seniors. You know, it's just a real cross section. And I remember myself at that age and how important it was to have good teachers and feel good about yourself. And I thought, you know what, maybe this is the better match for me and my teaching goals. And so I stayed to do my student teaching, and then I never left. How embarrassing is that? I've been one
you
school.
You left at some point.
I did leave because I'm retired now. But I
unless you haunt the halls, that's the question.
Right, I do. But I actually, I did teach like other schools during the summer, other places like community theater places. But as far as a regular teaching gig, I stayed at the same school. Saw it go through about 11 different principals, lots and lots of different philosophies of education. That great big art school started losing funding. And the next thing you know, it was kind of a little more like a regular school. Didn't have all of the fine, wonderful things they offered for arts. But Bowditch stayed strong the whole time I was there in theater. And I'm proud of that. Because it started out as a one period class, and I then taught it seven periods a day. So that was pretty lucky. I was lucky that I had that. So anyway, that's
yeah, we're lucky to have you as a teacher, because I know for myself, I hated middle school. Your class was like my favorite to go to. I went through 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, you know, all your beginning, advanced, intermediate, all that.
Yeah.
So I definitely got through middle school because of one of your classes, also because of history, but your class as well.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. You know, I think that there's a lot of kids that might not have ever had that experience because it's not offered everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I actually was hired at Bowditch as an art teacher. I don't know how many people know that, but I had a double major, art and theater. And there was only one class in drama, and there was a lady that was teaching it already. So I went in as an art teacher and taught sculpture. And in that class, I was allowed to teach animation, filmmaking. Again, we're talking Super 8 cameras and, right. you know, moving.
That's pretty groovy.
Yeah, it was really, I mean, I can imagine what it would have been like now. But, and then they offered me that one little period of drama the next year. And it just grew and grew and grew. And then I had to decide, do you want to just teach art or do you want to teach drama? Because they're both a full line. And you'll both understand this. The difference is, for me anyway, art is wonderful. It's very one-on-one. You sit down and you really get to talk to the kids. But there's something about drama that's so collaborative and so important for middle school. Yeah. And so I thought, do I want to, you know, teach people how to draw, or do I just want to have an experience that will help middle school kids just be kids? And I think drama was the answer. And I stayed there and loved it. Still do. So anyway, but that's, yes.
I feel like drama has more of an effect on shaping people's personality as a person, because, I think the thing I'm most grateful for from your drama class was all the improv training I got at such a young age, because improv training, I think, to me, has not just, you know, made me a better performer, but it's made me better at like talking to people, meeting people, listening, all those kind of crucial aspects of everyday life that go beyond, you know, doing lines on a stage.
Absolutely.
I got a lot from improv training with you.
Thank you. I actually
a lot of yes anding.
And you know, it's funny because I did not know improv very well. And so as I was about a second year teacher, I started taking in San Francisco classes so that I could get kind of a little more comfortable with improv. And I then ended up getting so involved in that scene that I was performing two nights a week in San Francisco. Would bring it back to the classroom and use what I just learned with my students. So to me, it was great. But beyond all that, I think I personally needed it to learn how to be in the moment. And I think that sounds so trite. A lot of people say that. But honestly, it's a skill that made me think every kid should take improv to learn how you know, go with what happens and make it work, you know, because it's not going to always be the way you planned it. So.
Yeah, anyway. It gave me so much confidence in terms of like welcoming failure and going with my first impulse and staying in the moment. But I'd love to bring the conversation back to your experience performing improv in San Francisco because you were a part of, I want to talk about your experience with Flash Families, one of the big hit improv groups and probably the longest running improv group in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Ran for years and years and years.
Yes.
How did you get involved in that?
I was taking classes. I think they were taught at Fort Mason. Am I saying that right? Yeah. Fort Mason. And again, purely to get some ideas for things to teach. And the woman who was in charge of Flash Family, Sue Walden, who was really kind of one of the oldest, and I'm saying oldest, but she wasn't that much older than me, but she has now become one of the oldest legendary person that people started with her. And she was wonderful to start with because she set it up in a very comfortable, almost family way. So you felt very supported. And about, I don't know, maybe a year into or less than a year, being in her workshops, she asked me if I'd like to be one of the players in Flash Family. And I was honored and I was full-time teaching, but I managed to say yes. And that required going up to San Francisco at least once a week for a full improv rehearsal, which sounds ironic, but you do improvise. I mean, you do rehearse. And then one or two nights a week, it's a spaghetti factory, the other cafe, lots of places had us. And that was the beginning of mine and then of my experience with improv. But then one of the improvisers there, who's very famous now in the world of improv, Rafe Chase.
Legend.
He and I became we are still very close. And Rafe decided he wanted to start his own group because as well as improv, he also liked scenes that he'd written. And so we decided to try to do a mixture, and that was complete no-no for a purist in improv, because you don't talk. I don't know about you guys, but really I would get in trouble if I was backstage and, you know, you leaned over to someone and went, I'll go out and be the mother. You can't do that. You just go out and be the mother. And then the person will get on if they want to with you. So Rafe had some wonderful, he's an amazing improviser, but he's also a great writer. So he had some good sketches. And so we did a combination of the two. And they were very, very well received. And yet the audience still bought into coming to see us, because a good portion of the show still involved getting, you know, suggestions from the audience. So it was a nice mixture of the two. And then I went on from that group to a group called San Francisco Improv, which also was Rafe. And that was where the long form was born. I'm going to give him full credit.
You were there first.
I was. And he'll admit that he really thought it was kind of taking a chance. But for people who don't know the difference between long form and regular improv, we might do an entire half of a show based on one suggestion, and it's making up right as you go along, full out play or a movie, sometimes a musical. And I always wondered if the audience would feel like, I'm not really getting to, you know, get involved as much. But we did a lot of audience suggestion in the first half. Second half then was this one long form. And I think it's developed so many different ways, but that was the very beginning of it. And it was real exciting to be part of that, because he had some great guests that would come and guest with us, and just very exciting to be part of all of that. And it's still going on. I mean, there's a lot going on at the Bayfront Theater in San Francisco, BATS, Bay Area. Mm-hmm. Do you guys? Yeah, we've talked about that. So
I saw Rafe at Unscripted a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, they're great. And he's actually part of something. What is this? Oh, we're going to just talk about poor little Rafe, but he is part of Three for All. Three for All is a three amazing men improv group. They go internationally. They're known like in Amsterdam and all different parts of Europe. And they also, of course, perform here in San Francisco. And one of the guys is from LA and the other one is traveling a lot, but they managed to get a well-attended couple of weekends in San Francisco. And I never miss, because they're wonderful. So anyway.
You know, I think the coolest part about you taking all that improv skills that you learned is that you brought it back to Bowditch. Because like, we did learn long form improv, kind of. It was like through the families that we did on Fridays.
Yes. Can we talk about the families?
Sure. Those are wild.
Because I don't think any other middle school drama class attempted that. Because that felt, looking back, that project felt a lot more advanced for our age. Can you just explain what the families project was?
I have to tell you, that evolved from a workshop I was taking, here we go again, with Rafe. And the point of it was to let you have a character that you were going to be committed to grow with. And it was like a weekly thing where, you know, when I met with his workshop, we picked up where we left off before. So it was sort of like a recurring soap opera.
Like a weekly soap opera sitcom.
So the way we did it in middle school was we put everybody's name in a hat. I don't know if you remember this, but it was like birthing you. We pulled a name out of a bowl, and that was the beginning of one family, and then another.
It was groups of five, I think.
Yes. Five people in about six groups, because our classes were usually about 30 kids.
Right.
And you did not really have too much guidance as far as what the storyline was. We just needed to know a little bit about who you were. And I kept notes so that, you know, we could say, remember, as we visited the Johnsons last week, Bobby found out that he was losing his job or whatever. And then we continue. And by the end of the semester, and this was at the end of the year, these were eighth grade, the cream of the crop actors at the school. And they were all very committed, stuck to their character well, and their character started to develop. And then at the end, I tried to find a reason why all six families would come together. I don't know if you guys remember how.
Oh, yeah.
I remember a couple of intersectional. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the end, it was all six were like at a wedding or a will reading or a reunion of sorts. And then they had to interact and stay in character for the whole period, but also talk to those other people. And that was always one of my favorite times of the year.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember our characters. I was
Sam,
weird,
what was your family?
I was a weird punk rocker, and I was the aunt of the family. I just like lived over the garage, kind of like Fonzie. And yeah. My name was Silver. And I had different colored hair that I said. I think I wore a wig or something like that. Okay. And I would just like kind of like talk around like, hey everybody, like I'm here. I'm the cool aunt. It was an experience.
That was good. Do you remember your family?
Oh yeah. I played, I don't remember my character's name, but I played a delinquent foster kid.
That's so good.
Yeah, it was because in eighth grade, everyone was tired of me doing comedy. And so I was like, I'm going to launch into like the darkest, most serious kind of role I can think of. Ooh. And so it was all just about like me fitting into this new family that I hated.
Oh, that's
cool. Like wearing your hair all like over your eye, like your floppy hair.
Yes, exactly. I think one time they like caught me with drugs or something. It was dark.
Well, probably. And then, one time, one of my memories of this that has stuck out, one time somebody was depressed, and this is, these all led to good conversations later about the things that they were dealing with. Anyway, I think they took an overdose of something whatever, and they died. And I said, well, congratulations, we still have a half of a year. I mean, what are you gonna do? And he said, don't worry, we figured it out, don't worry. And I said, well, you're not supposed to plan. Yeah okay, don't worry. So the next week he's not there. He chose to sit out. And by the way, that was always an option. You could go a whole day and not be part of it, because sometimes less is better than more.
You don't have the characters in it, because they were all like 7 minutes or something.
Sometimes it got a little crazy. You're like, oh, they're all there.
Oh yeah. And I would fade the light right in the middle of somebody's sentence. It would be 10 minutes no matter what. And
you want to have your moment.
Yeah. So meanwhile, just this guy decides about 2 weeks later, he shows up, and they did talk about it, but it seemed like it was improvised. They all decided no one could see him except for his sister. Oh. And he was a ghost. So it was really cool, because
that's a clever narrative device.
It was very cool. Yeah. So, I mean, he got him back in, and he was actually integral to the sister, especially. And but it was fun for him to do stuff, and the people were totally unaware that he was in there. So that was a good choice and a way to save your grade, because I had nothing to base his grade on after the first half of the semester. But anyway, yeah, that was family. Was fun. I liked that.
Like our first foray into long form improv.
Yeah.
I definitely always looked forward to Fridays. That was like, we're going to do families.
Yeah.
Because they were always so exciting to watch too.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you guys, what was cool about that and all improv in middle school, and I tried to always explain this to sixth graders when I was getting them interested. When you start getting into middle school age, you don't get to play pretend anymore. I mean, maybe you do privately in your bedroom, with your maybe one good friend or something, but it's pretty private. And you still need, so do adults, that ability to play.
Without being judged.
Yeah. And so it was a chance for kids. It was an okay space to continue to play, to be pretend. When you were a little kid, it was like, oh, I'll be the mother, you be the doctor, whatever. Now you are older and you just could be in any kind of scene you wanted. And hopefully it would be a character a little different than you. So you had a little bit of a challenge, but it was playing, it was pretending. And we need, as adults, to keep playing, I think. I really do. I think it's a skill that we lose too early in most of our lives. So anyway, that's just a little added thought on that.
I want to ask you something that could only be like in the case of teaching drama for so long. What is it like when you're on like your fifth Wizard of Oz, or like the eighth time you do The Music Man, like kind of repeating those classic shows over and over?
Okay. What? I did a little homework before I talked to you, because I was afraid you were going to ask me. And I will just say this. I did 41 shows at Bowditch, and only five twice.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, and then when I say twice, it was with a long time in between, so that the kids that were in the first round of it were now either in by the end of high school or well out. You know, they'd come back and go, oh, I remember that. And they were classics that I liked, that I thought we had the right people for, because a lot of, I never precast, really don't, but you do, you know, as a director or a teacher, you look at what you have and you say, this year is really heavy girls. And we have a lot of girls and we only have three guys and only two of them can sing, you know, and you start thinking about that. But what was kind of neat about that was when you open up auditions, out of the woodwork might come a couple of kids that you don't know yet. And that was always fun, because that made definitely casting a little more of a challenge, but a lot more fun for those of us who were putting the cast together. And so how did I do it? I think there was enough time in between each one. I am one of those people, and you guys might know this just from me being in audiences of things you've done. I can see something 5 or 10 times in a row. I mean, I look at different aspects every time I look at it. You know, I might just be watching it from a technical aspect. I still am aware of what's going on acting wise, but I'm watching it this particular time to be able to understand how they did the sets and how they did the props and did I agree, you know. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is, it's just a whole new ball game when it's a whole new cast. And that.
Yeah, I think I remember having you come to see me in a show. And then you mentioned something like, I really liked when you were in that scene and you were in the background. And I was like, wait, you noticed that? I think it was when you came to see Pajama Game, and there was like a scene in the way back, and you're like, and you did this scene, and then people were fighting over you at Hernando's Hideaway. And I was like, no one would have noticed that if it was way in the back in the dark. But yeah, you pointed it out.
Oh, sweet. Well, when I go to see a show and there's kids in it that I know, I, of course, I'm going to be watching them much more than I'm going to watch everybody else. And I'm usually always so pleasantly surprised at how in character and all the things that I was hoping that they got from their earliest adventures in theater. So, but everybody grows. And that's the best part about this from my angle, is to see how people, you two included, have grown in this, well, have grown in life. That's number one, but also in this whole process of theater, and how you've both of you far exceed my knowledge in lots of areas, because it's now your area. You know, you're really finding out more about things like writing or even directing on your own, and all of those things that I think is exciting. I'm happy to see it happen.
And I think what Xander was saying, I think that was your best skill in terms of finding little background moments for people and kind of elevating people who are in the ensemble and giving everybody their own moment to feel special. I think that's what really you were best at.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Well, you know what? I was never the lead. I never wanted to be the lead when I was in stuff as a kid. I was always the backstage girl who was really happy to be a part of the ensemble. And I knew I could have handled more, but honestly was really happy with that. So that's where I look at those kids a lot, because I know it means a lot to you when you know someone's looking and seeing and appreciating what you're doing. Likewise, I use that same kind of observational skill to realize when they were not directed very well, because that's when you see a group of kids that are not in character. They're all talking, they're looking at their friends in the audience or whatever.
Or standing in a line.
Or standing in a straight line.
You worked with such large ensembles. Like, you know, you'd always joke, oh, it's a Virginia Mizante show. There's 120 kids on stage. But like there's always, little ways for each person to have their moment.
That's
nice. I think when you did Hello Dolly, you had like a whole bunch of people come out and sing Ribbons Down My Back. I think it was like Irene Malloy, and then like somebody came out of the closet, me too, and somebody came out.
Somebody joked about oh my god, I can't believe I did Flower Drum Song, but I did, and there's the song I Enjoy Being a Girl and sung by one woman, and I had like six girls getting ready, and they were all singing, "We Enjoy Being a Girl."
I mean, why not?
Yeah, what the heck? Give everybody a moment. That's one thing you can get away with middle school that maybe you can't when you get to the higher grades, because
You can kind of more transparently expand bits for more people.
Right. And you know what? The percentage of kids in middle school that continued on in high school is marginally smaller. I mean, it starts getting a little more competitive, and there's other options in high school. You know, there's other things you might want to do that you can't right. do at the same time. So I know when I'm watching these kids, this might be their last time on stage for a while. They might do community theater later, but it's not going to be happening for a while.
It gets less accessible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Too many choices in high school.
Yeah.
Speaking of shows, what is your wildest show story? I'm sure you have a bunch of them.
Oh my goodness. I thought you might ask me this. Let's see. Wildest meaning like crazy funny?
It could be up to your interpretation, but I would love to hear something.
I think, and I'm trying to think, this might have been, Xandra, your era, but I'm not sure. You know, I did the first 10 years, we did a review, and on the 11th year, and it was called, it was called, not a score for Bowditch, that was second.
Play it again.
Play it again, Bowditch. And that was kind of nice. It was 10 shows, very doable, kind of did a little bit of scenes from each of the shows. The next time we did that, it was the 20th year, and that was called A Score for Bowditch. Very cleverly, the score meaning 20.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And so I remember saying to my staff and my husband, oh, it's going to be so easy because it'll be like a talent show. It'll be like 20 different acts, and each act could be, you know, from the show, sort of our favorite numbers. And every kid who's in the show can be in maybe 4 different shows. They just have to change their costume. Let's add a person who used to be in the show when they were, you know, they were in the original one, and they can introduce it. And even though they're 28 now, maybe they'll come back, you know. And so it sounded like a great idea. And actually it was. But at around halfway through it, I realized, oh my God, this is a monster project.
Yeah, and we had crazy to produce.
We had wonderful parents that were willing to sew costumes for, you know, so many kids. And all those kids had to be spaced from the first show they were in to the last, so they would have time to change. I mean, it's just the logistics was crazy. So my husband jokes about the story that I guess was maybe about a week or two before we opened. And, you know, we always go, God, if I just had a couple more weeks, this would be yeah. so much better. And so I was probably at that stage, and I got up in the middle of the night, which I don't usually do. I'm a pretty solid sleeper. And I was in the living room just freaked out that this was not going to come together. So my husband walks in and he goes, what are you doing up in at this hour?
It's a score for Bowditch.
That's what I said. I thought it was going to be like a talent show. It's not like a talent show. And I was just beside myself. And so he calmed me down. He goes, okay, you're going to finish this. Relax. It's going to be good. And it was. And one of the reasons I think I was able to succeed, as in every year, and you guys know this too, I had very wonderful helpers, which ironically, when I was mm-hmm. doing stuff in the summer for Hill Barn with teenagers, you guys were terrific.
Right. We were your assistants.
You were assistants, but you were wonderful. I mean, you could have probably taken part of the show and just directed it yourself. But the point is, I think I always was very lucky. From the first 10 years, some of those kids came back. You know, they went to college. Nancy Fitzgerald went off to UCLA mm-hmm. and then she came back and said, I want to help. And that's what she did at the beginning. She just helped. And the next thing you know, she got more involved and more involved. And we found that we both sort of had the same vision. So we always worked really well together. There was Eddie Curtell came back from the first 10 years. Suzanne Waldman. These were people who were kind of my silent heroes. The kids knew who they were, but nobody really knew. And I was getting all this credit for doing this amazing work. And I actually had some wonderful, wonderful helpers. Ron Ho, who's still involved.
Legend.
With shows in the area. But he started out as a dad. They came up to me and said, I play guitar. Would you like me to play in the pit? Mm-hmm. And now he's the lighting and sound man for most
everybody.
Jack of all trades for everything. Yeah.
But he had that same work ethic to make it be like he was mentoring kids. So he always made it interesting. And
We're going to have Ron on our podcast soon. We got to talk to him.
Oh, that would be fun.
It'd be a fun one.
Yeah. And he knows like all about the differences between all the different schools and all the different community theaters because he's worked them all. So he would be good. But anyway, that's one thing that I need.
Sounds like, the most stressful moment.
It was stressful, but it turned out to be, when I look back at all the shows, one of the ones that I was most proud of. So it's like anything else. Sometimes when you put the most work into something, if it comes together, it's just miraculous. And I've felt that way a lot, but that one the most.
So when you cast that show with me in it, you only put me in 4 numbers to begin with.
Yeah.
I ended up being in 8 numbers by the end of the show.
You must.
I was like, how did I get in all these numbers? Yeah. I somehow ended up being a nun. I somehow ended up singing. Yeah. Yeah. Cause like none of the boys could sing that low. Then you added me to Lucy, because the Lucy that was going to be there was not there for your good man, Charlie Brown.
Oh, good.
And yeah, it was just insane. And I just remember like layering all my outfits for the first act. It was like, I just kept taking off a shirt and taking off a shirt. And then I had another shirt underneath.
You looked heavy at the beginning and by the end of the show.
I was like, look at me at the end of the show.
I metamorphosized.
That is very cute. Yeah, no, I'm glad you were in that. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. It was,
oh yeah.
And backstage, it was pretty crazy. I mean, it was crazy.
It was definitely not fire code for sure.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm trying to think where that was. Was it at Sampac?
Yeah, it was at the PAC.
It was, okay. Because sometimes, you know, we talked about all these shows starting in 1977. And the first one or two was in the little gym about it. Then we moved to Sarah High School. Mm-hmm. And then we went to Hillsdale High School. And then we were the lucky winners of being able to do it at San Mateo Performing Arts Center. And I think that's when we really raised the bar. So we had to go up a little notch with that one, because I always say it's like when kids get in there, it's like walking in a church when you're, you know, or a synagogue.
I mean, it's like a professional theater.
Yeah. Whoa.
So you have to get serious. You can't start chasing each other and, you know, eating food in there, because you go, ooh, this is a special place and we get to be in here. Yeah. So that was lucky. And for all the shows we did there, wonderful support from the staff there, Dave LeBlanc, lots of really good people. So yeah. Anyway.
Another big, you know, facet of your teaching career. Can you talk about the beginnings of SNAP and how all that came to me? Because I know that that's so important to you as well. And
Thank you.
It was important to me when I kind of volunteered there for, I think
how many years did you do?
I think 3 years in high school.
Yeah, you were wonderful. For people who don't know what that is, that's originally it stood.
Get back to middle school.
It stood for special needs, which right now is not the term you use anymore, but special needs arts program. And it was a chance for kids who had differing abilities, which is what they call it now.
Neurodivergence.
Kids that were in maybe somewhere on the autism spectrum. And we had a very variety of kids that could be very verbal, and there were some that were non-speakers. And then there were kids with Down syndrome and some kids with just learning delay, which meant that they needed a little more, you know, explanation when they were learning something. But what it was a dance arts center. Lovely, Jane Zabin was very interested in doing this kind of a program. And so together we offered it, and it took off, because there's nothing like it for that particular type of kid. And there's so many kids in that same area of education that desperately want to do something musical, whether it's singing, dancing, all of the above, a little tiny bit of acting. Some of them wanted to do things with sign, because sign language was their manner of communicating. But what Jane and I wanted to do more than anything, and this is where we had wonderful people, just so much like Noah, it was just so beautiful to see. These were kids that took at the dance studio that wanted to help with the program, and they are paired up one-on-one with a particular kid. It's not always the same one every week, because sometimes someone's sick and someone would cover for somebody else, but generally you had the same person for that particular, they were 10-week sessions, and they would learn. We'd have a theme, you know, the theme might be weather, let's say, and then all the songs and the little skits in between had to do with rain or snow or whatever.
Somebody singing Let It Go.
One of the ones that I did was travel. I think we did one that was like golden oldies.
Oh, that's so cute that you remember. We have a big log of all the stuff we've done, mm-hmm. and it's an endless, you know, you can just keep going with these guys. But they're every age from 6 up to the teen ages, but a lot of those quote teenagers were really in their 20s, you know. And so and it had very little to do with chronological age. It had to do with what they were able to do. But physically, the older kids generally could do more and could understand a little bit more of why we had certain rules. Like, you know, you have to stand in a certain way and face the mirror. And
some became mentors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, and some of the people that were these one-on-one aides have gone on to college, and that's become their, you know, their main emphasis, you know, like Lauren,
that's Lauren, awesome. Lauren, yeah. Alyssa Leonard, Paige, a lot of those people.
Yeah. It made us very proud. And I think we've always said this, that as much as the special needs kids had a wonderful experience, I think it was equally wonderful for the helpers, the one-on-one, but we call them the buddies, and the buddies really, and they had a lot of, chance to kind of talk to a few people on our staff that, you know, knew a little bit more about what you can and can't do with certain kids, why somebody is doing what they're doing, and how to be a little softer, a little quieter than you might be in a regular classroom. And anyway, it thank you for bringing that up. It's unfortunately COVID shut it down, and we are now offering and it's successful, an evening class. It's for the older kids, and they have a teacher that's really good, and it's one night a week, and they do musical theater numbers and all that. Mm-hmm. That's our kids that we've had before, and now they're really older. And
there are some folks that have stayed there for a decade.
Yes, yeah, and we want to still serve them, because believe it or not, as you get out of school, I'm sure you believe this, as you get out of school, there aren't any programs for these kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they're kind of stuck in the middle. They're kind of, there are some things for adults, but they don't really quite consider them adults yet. And they're definitely out of school. Maybe they got to be in high school till they were like 18 or 19. But now, you know, so we're glad to do it for the older kids, but
another facet for them.
But yeah.
Yeah. I get why some of the folks who've been staying there for over 10 years would say, why am I doing stuff with 9-year-olds still?
Yeah. Well, no, but now they're divided. I mean, it isn't always chronological, because remember Ranjani, she was our oldest girl, and she was the tiniest kid in the class. So it had to do with capability and all of that. But, so anyway, that's near and dear to our heart. I'm saying our, because Jane and I really feel proud that that's still something that hopefully will continue in the spring. Now we're going to offer it again and see if we can get kids signed up that want to be those buddies, because it's such a big part of this. And the faculty, there's about 7 of us, and we all have our expertise, and I pretty much just kind of sew it all together. And we have like 3 dance people and 2 singing people. And anyway, that's SNAP. Yes.
Yeah. When I worked for SNAP, I felt like I really learned a lot about teaching and about patience and about kind of meeting people where they are. Perfect. And kind of how to treat an individual.
Perfect. I love to hear that. I can't say enough how much it means to us when we hear that people are benefiting on both sides of the pairings. Mm-hmm. And that's great. Good. Thank you. Thanks for mentioning that.
Of course.
Means a lot.
So, all right. Lightning round. Yeah.
Lightning round. Yes. Let's do it. All right. This is just about, you know, your taste, your personal feelings about theater and everything along that.
Okay.
Let's start with, do you have a favorite Broadway diva?
Yes. Yes, I have a lot of people that I admire deeply. And I don't even know if this person goes under the heading of diva, but I'm a big Bernadette Peters fan.
Oh, of course she does.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, she is definitely a brother diva.
But see, I kind of think of diva sometimes in a negative way. So I don't want...
No, we're talking capital D diva.
Okay, yeah. that then. Okay, then of course, Patti LuPone. And that those would be two that I
the quintessential.
Okay, mm-hmm. But yeah. But I'm a big Bernadette Peters fan. I love everything she's ever done. So that would be her. I'm trying to think.
And then what is a dream role or dream show you would wish to direct?
Oh, good question. Well, this is funny. San Mateo High School once did Lucky Stiff, and I've wanted to direct it over and over again in different locations. Hardly anybody knows it, and hardly anybody mm-hmm. wants it to be done, but there are so many people that are my friends who are directors who would also like to do it. So I would probably never actually have that happen. I'd like to do that. And I think I would probably, well, like I said, I wouldn't mind doing Noises Off again. And
I want to see you as Dottie Ottley.
That would be hilarious.
Oh, no. But I actually, if you're talking about me being in something, when I was a kid or when I was younger, I knew... Oh God, now that I think of it, because we did this twice, Bye Bye Birdie. And I actually really always wanted to be Rosie, who was, you know, the crazy lady that, not the lead, she was the lead. But then I outgrew that and it was like, too late now, lady, you can't do it. So I think now I'm more of a Golda, you know, Jack's mother.
Yeah, you'd make a great Golda.
Or maybe even Yenta, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Fiddler on the Roof was the only show that I did with you in middle school.
No.
Because I didn't do the sixth grade show because I did ETC.
You did another show.
I did another show. and then in seventh grade, Nancy directed the show.
That's what I was just going to say, that you were in that one.
Yes, and Back to the 80s, wonderful show that was for our parents, not really us. But I learned a lot about 80s culture from that. But then Fiddler on the Roof, my eighth grade year and your last year.
And you were...
Muttle the Taylor.
The Taylor. Oh, you were wonderful.
Of course.
Right.
And when in the wedding scene where everyone's on stage... And they say, when did he grow to be so tall? The entire audience laughed. And then that made the entire rest of the actors laugh.
Because you're so short.
Because I was so short.
Oh, that's so cute.
It was a good thing that my back was turned to the audience. So I couldn't see the humiliation in my eyes.
Oh,
yes.
That's such a seventh, eighth grade kind of problem. How sad. Sorry about that. But you're tall now,
Noah.
Yeah. I grew 6 inches in ninth grade. Why couldn't I be Muttle the Taylor then?
Muttle can be any height they want. And who was
you could be Muttle now.
Who was opposite you?
It was Tara Nash as
Seitel. See, she's tall.
And she was taller.
She was a lovely girl, but she was definitely tall
for
middle school. And you were a little guy, but you were cute as could be. So it didn't matter. I loved that. That was a good show.
That was a fun one.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the second time we did that one.
Get in that first time you did it.
Did you try out?
I did audition. It was not a good audition. Oh, it was okay. I cried after it.
Was that Mike Sefanoff being,
Tevye.
Okay. He was
okay. I did props instead and I made cheese. Oh.
That's good though. You're talking to someone who respects and loves the tech end. So
yeah. And now I'm doing props for a show right now. So
I never could buy that when a kid was like, you mean I have to be back? Yeah, it's fun. You know the show. First of all, the tech people, by the way, know everybody's line way better than the actors do.
Yeah.
And they see it. I think they see the show from such a wonderful vantage point. I think it's special. So I would always tell kids, it's not a bad gig, kids. Go for it. It's a lot of fun. And then you learn a lot. And art-wise and also from watching the actors. Like I said, some of the way would roll their eyes if somebody was like not a very good whatever, and they would have better ways of doing things, and it was cute. That's the tech people though. Love them. Mm-hmm. Love them.
Totally. All right. Is there a song, moment, or show that always never fails to make you cry?
No. You mean not just a show I've done?
No, just in general of your taste.
Yeah. Pretty much a sucker for a whole bunch of stuff from Into the Woods.
So many moments in that show. Yeah,
but around the very end, when it's like father, like son, and and I love, you know, when the witch is singing that someone to guide you, someone in the woods,
no one is alone.
No one is alone. Yeah, beautiful. Those get me. I do get teary a lot in sometimes it's not even what the words are, it's the beautiful sound of you know,
or like the feeling.
I just saw the band Visit.
Oh, that show's beautiful.
I loved it, and I loved the music. Not everybody did. It's okay.
So tender, yeah.
But there were certain harmonies in that where I just got chills, and I got teary, and I thought, I'm not 100% sure what they're saying, but I just loved the sound of that. It was just
That last number is amazing in Band's Visit.
Yeah, very, very beautiful. So anytime you hit a beautiful piece of harmony, that gives me chills, and that can get me teary for sure.
I find it's a lot easier to cry when something's in song than rather just like a movie. Or
that's a good point. I think it's probably that I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's so repetitive. You know, when you're going through your emotions, you kind of have to repeat things to kind of feel them.
That's good. That's right. Yes, that's absolutely. Oh, now you're making me cry.
Okay, so let's move on then. What is your intermission snack/routine?
When I'm
a lot of plays.
When you're directing or in it, but you haven't been in a show yet, but maybe you will be in Into the Woods one day.
I've been in shows.
No, but I meant like you. Yes. Oh. Recently.
Oh yes. And lots of improv. So in between, I am definitely a bathroom user, and it's usually in my head, but I just think, what if I go out there and suddenly I have to? So that's number one. Lots of water, whether I'm directing or whatever. And usually as a director, it's the time when I go and seek out people that I felt in act one might need a little encouragement, or just a little pep talk or whatever. And I have two little things that reminds me of. One time I had I was doing Annie, and the girl who was playing Annie, and this was about it years before you got, and the girl who's playing Annie had migraines, and she got a really bad migraine right in the middle of act one, I could tell. But she went ahead and did her thing, and then she came back, and I said to her, are you getting one of your headaches? And she said, yeah. And I said, you know what? You get migraines, but Annie doesn't. So just when you step on that stage, be Annie. So when she went out there, she looked great. She did great. Act two was wonderful, the whole thing. When it was over, I saw her and I go, I couldn't even tell you had a headache. You were wonderful. And she goes, oh, I didn't have a headache, because Annie doesn't get headaches.
Now, that's wonderful.
And she goes, but now I think I have to get
it. Now that you reminded me.
I will be Annie for the rest of my life.
Right. So I think that's what I did a lot. I did a lot of a little bit of pep talking, and sometimes people needed pepping up, and sometimes people needed calming down. But you can feel the mood in the room, you know, and go with whatever seems to be needed.
That reminds me of a lovely memory I have, where I remember, you know, of course, as a director, you would give us notes in the rehearsals of what we needed to do better and everything we need to fix and all that. But I remember it always felt good during the performances, in like the weaker performances. You always would just give us notes on things that we were doing well. It was only positive, because when we're performing, I guess we didn't need the extra stress of figuring out what we needed to change, because the show was what it was at that point. You always wrote out specific things of that we were doing well. And that I remember was really impactful.
Wow. I think maybe at that point, you know, there is a point, and a director and a choreographer will say this, you actually kind of look at yourself or each other and you say, you know, I think this is about as good as they're going to be able to do this. So rather than beat a dead horse or whatever,
it's
that
in their hands
is,
now.
Yeah. It's going to come together. And you know what? The magic of an audience makes every performance get so much better.
Yeah.
Even 100%. From dress rehearsal to opening night, you see the difference of the energy from the audience and the fact that mom's out there or grandma came in town to see you. And it just is so amazing to me, the beauty of what happens when there's really an audience. That's why all this COVID, you know, stuff that we've been doing has been wonderful, but the missing ingredients
is an actual
audience. That real live, hear them laugh, hear them wiggle in their seat, hear them, you know, cry. That's why live theater is so wonderful. And it's every single performance is different. That's what's great about it. So,
all right. Well, let's end with the final question, the most weighty of them all.
Oh, no.
For your greatest experience you've ever had at the theater. This could be in a show that you were a part of, a show that you're just seeing, just a something that strikes you as, wow, this is as good as it gets.
Okay. My personal, there's a lot of them, so I'm not going to do that. But there have been moments when I've stood back and just been, this is, everything came together. I'm just in heaven. Thank you, you know, universe. But I personally, as an audience member, the first Broadway show I ever went to, I had taken a group of students to New York, and we saw Lion King.
Oh,
and wow. I don't know, I gotta tell you, what when those animals...
That show's dazzling.
I mean, when they came down the aisle,
it was the drafts.
It hadn't even started yet. I just, it was music, you know, and it was building up. And
it's mesmerizing.
I just have to say that there was never another moment like that. And it was probably because I was A, in New York, so it was a real Broadway show. B, I had no idea this costume woman was going to be so amazingly miraculous. I mean, we knew about it, but to see it in person and all the little details, again, that's probably my tech appreciation, but also the music was wonderful. The story was great. I just loved the look of it. So that would be my moment that really stands out as far as being in the audience and feeling something wonderful. So
Lion King was the first show that I really saw on a big stage too, and really fell in love with the kind of grandeur of it all. I remember seeing it when I was like 6 or 7.
Yeah, the grandeur and the simplicity. I mean, in a way, that was what was beautiful. I mean,
puppets and all that.
Yeah, and the big stone that's supposed to be a mountain, and you just believe the whole range was there.
Right.
Beautiful. Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been a wonderful interview. It's been so nice to talk with you and
see your face.
Yeah.
But not on the podcast.
No. I know. But just to kind of go down and deep about things that we, you know, have always kind of known about you, but haven't really known the specifics.
Now everyone knows your secrets.
Oh my God.
We opened a Pandora's box for everyone to know.
Oh my goodness. Well, I want to thank you two, because I think, you know, it's nice when you're retired to know that you're still remembered and to allow me to still share, you know, some of the things that I've learned. And it makes other people that are doing what I'm doing go, yeah, people actually appreciate you. You know, it's nice to know. It's nice to know that you can be remembered in the future. So thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you've seen that you've, you know, made an indelible mark on the community of Foster City.
Well,
by so many just years of people taking your class.
Where's your plaque and your gold medal?
Yes. Where's your statue, damn it?
That statue in Ryan Park.
Is it in Bowditch somewhere? Paper mache?
You'll get a bust outside the...
With macaroni. The
macaroni bust. That would be good.
Made by sixth grade art students.
Yeah,
that's good. Well, good. Yay.
All right, well, let's do a formal outro.
Yes, I don't think we said like a formal goodbye.
Oh, okay.
Well, thank you, Virginia, for coming on.
It was such a wonderful time with you.
Thank you so much, both of you. I loved hearing from both of you and hope to see you both eventually in person next time.
Yes,
yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, and maybe I won't dye my hair blonde anymore. I'll go back to the brown.
I do like that blaze that you have, though.
You look wonderful.
It goes with my sweater.
Yes, and you shaved half the sides.
Well,
yes.
you noticed that. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. All right, follow us on Instagram at theaterworld_readings. And hey, you know what? You made it this far into the episode. Why not log on to Apple Podcasts and leave us a little review?
Yeah, we'd love to hear it.
All that stuff really helps get the word out. And we will see you next time on a brand new episode of the Theater World Podcast.
Yay!
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.